So when was your last checkup? Oh no, not you. Although that's important too, but when was your last vehicle checkup? When it comes to service, nobody knows your Chevy better than your local Chevy dealer. Go to ChevyDriveChicago.com to schedule an appointment today.
From the Skyline Studios, high above Columbus and Wacker Drives. This is Anna DeBlantos. Thanks for joining us. We have a very fun, festive Friday show in store for you today. And why not? Christmas a couple days away, you've got Hanukkah a couple days away. A lot of celebrations and a lot of reasons to celebrate and eat. We've got the Nude Dude Food guys here in studio. Welcome, guys.
Hey, thanks for having us.
Yeah, Lauren Lapka's here. G is here. We're going to talk all kinds of things. One of the things I do think of immediately when I think of the holidays is food, probably because I do so much cooking. I cook for the family. We have the big fat Greek and Italian family over, and I cook and I cook and I cook. We do the Feast of the Seven Fishes. There are a number of traditions we're expected to continue over the years. We have the cheese log because several members of the family, they like the cheese tray and they like all the things that go on the cheese tray and stuff like that. So I want to talk to you guys about some ideas, and I want to solicit from our listeners your favorite holiday food. Do you have like a go-to recipe? Do you just have a favorite that you like to eat? 312-981-7200. Let us know. Let us know what it is, and we'll share it with everybody. And you guys have some ideas, too. But before we get to you, I do need to promote who's on the show today. Lauren, did you hear who's on the show today?
I think I heard Santa's coming to our studio.
The Santa is going to be...
Anna, you got the connections,
man. Can you believe this? I mean, can you... Somehow, even though it's the busiest time of the year, such a busy day for Santa, he's actually calling in from the North Pole.
Oh, well, that's nice enough.
He agreed to give us a couple minutes.
He's a busy guy.
He totally is. And he was, oh my gosh, so gracious when I approached him and said, hey, can you come on the show? We have some second graders coming in the studio. They have a ton of questions for Santa. And we want to make sure that they get answered. And he goes, sure, you know, I'll be happy to do that. And I said, now, some of these questions are kind of hard because I've looked at them already.
Oh.
And I would not know how to answer these, Santa. But he's like, don't worry about it. All right.
He's only been doing this for how many years?
He's not nervous about this, apparently. I was nervous for him. But they're really good questions. And if your child has questions, too, that's going to be at 2:30. Call in. Talk directly to the Santa at this busy time of year and ask him a question. One of the questions I saw was, how do the reindeer fly?
Ooh, okay. That's a really good question.
Yeah, I don't know the answer to that. But
I think it's donuts.
We have some donuts in the studio here for the kids when they're here so that they get a little sugar high and have
Does
lots of energy.
Does not make them fly, though. Let's just make that clear. They will not be flying out the studio.
See, if Santa tells them that, then they're going to eat donuts. And yeah, it could be dangerous. So, but Santa knows how to answer these. We don't. The Nude Food Dudes, though. They have some answers to your holiday questions. I think a lot of us, if you're not cooking, I know I cook a ton over the next few days. In fact, we start doing some of those things that we can, you know, like there's like a stew we do and that can be preserved for a little while. And then, you know, we do a bunch of stuff in our kitchen. My mother-in-law comes, my mom does some, you know, it's our tradition and that it's such a cool tradition. I love the baking and the cooking, sharing around the family.
I want to know about your Feast of the Seven Fishes because I know there's for different Italian Americans, there's different traditions. Some people like to do actually literally seven different types of seafood. Some people like seven courses. Some people like 12 courses based on the 12 apostles. What is your tradition?
Yeah. Hadn't heard that one. This was actually my mother-in-law. She's Italian. And it was her tradition that she did for years and years and years. And it got to a point where she no longer could do all of it. It's a ton of work for such a big family. So I started sharing it with her. And so the women in the family, we all stepped up and we cooked together. And it's a ton of fun. We drink a little wine. We hang out in the kitchen. And we truly do seven
you
different
do.
Unique fish dishes.
Well, this is perfect. I mean, Greeks know about fish.
Oh,
so this is a perfect marriage.
We totally do. And I love cooking. I've tried to learn some of her recipes. And then I've tried to introduce my own as well. And it just, it works. And I love it. But you guys say, I mean, you do parties. First of all, talk about what you do. Nude Dude Food Company.
That
it's very successful.
Yeah,
you're out of the West Loop, but you do parties of all kinds, no matter what's on the menu.
We are. So we're based out of the West Loop. Because of social media, we travel all over the country, providing small to medium-sized corporate events, private dinners here in Chicago. We've traveled to almost every major city in the country. Because of the name... you know, people think, what is nude? We're not nude. We really like to talk about, we're a health and wellness brand. I know that's a kind of a cliche term now, but what we do is provide a dining experience from a wide range of kind of dietary concerns, menu planning, everything is kind of organic. So when it comes to health and wellness for us or menu planning, we really just want to start with real food. So we're a big proponent of the Green City Market in the summer. We hit up a lot of different purveyors in the winters for still fresh, farm fresh fruits and vegetables. And
I should
mention what guides our menu.
So I want to talk about that, Ryan. And I should mention it, Ryan Van Voorhis.
Correct.
And Andy Suarez, yes, is the other nude dude food guy. And you were just talking about the Green City Market and all that stuff. It's interesting because so many people have this focus on local because it's fresher and that's cool. And then you're in the winter. What can we get in Chicago? But now those kinds of things have totally, totally improved over time because of these greenhouses and that kind of thing that source you guys with food.
Absolutely. So Andy will probably talk a little more. He's worked at a couple of them in the city. It's a great way for us to kind of give back and really connect with the farmers and connect with the different companies in the city that are providing these fresh fruits and vegetables and microgreens year-round that people may not know about. But if they do a little research or talk to some people at your Whole Foods or grocery store, there is a lot of fresh vegetables and fruit available all year round.
That's right. So as he was like kind of mentioning, we're doing private dining, but we're also doing cooking classes. And one of the main things with, like, you know, winter, lots of root vegetables, but now having access to greenhouses where we can get access to microgreens, leafy lettuce, arugula, and so many other things that were not available before the whole, like, hydroponic farm started.
Right. And you see a lot of that now. It's such a growing industry. What's the go-to, though? Go-to holiday appetizer that just always wows. Do you have one of those? Do you have one that everybody loves?
I think Ryan might have a different one, but with me, it's always been, I grew up in a Mexican family, so it might be tamales, which is like little tamales, but with me, it's arancini, which is just like fried risotto balls.
Oh, I love those.
Ooh. Those are so good.
Oh, fancy.
Fried food, who doesn't like fried food?
Right. I'm not too picky personally. We actually posted on our Instagram a question last night. We did a cured salmon kind of canapé on a cucumber slice, so maybe that's a little more technical for most people, but the question was, like, what is your favorite past app appetizer? And some of the comments were like, anything wrapped in bacon, you know, so the holidays are a time that, you know, it's time to be indulgent, kind of not worry about your diet so much.
Right.
But yeah, for us, I mean, our menus are changing for every event we do. But one thing that we do consistently is you start with like homemade fresh bread and charcuterie and cheese board. So we've been making homemade sourdough bread for about 5 years.
Wow.
You know, it's not for sale. If you get it, you know, you book us, we'll bring it to an event. But I think just who doesn't love also, you know, fresh bread and butter. You know, almost every family in America in some fashion starts with, you know, a starch or a bread and butter kind of course. So
yeah,
we start all of our dinners in that fashion in some way and then pair it with, you know, local meats and cheeses. And then from there, you know, the sky's the limit.
The meat and cheese board, yes, is highly,
especially with some olives.
Always a hit, right?
Yes. I feel that has been, the charcuterie board with cheese has become an Instagram worthy. It's viral.
It's
people
crazy.
Are yeah. trying to top one another. And I have seen boards that look like little mountains. It's not only the there's almonds, there's walnuts, there's fresh fruit, figs, grapes. It's everybody wants to top one another,
and that's for us like the first impression you see at a party too, whether
that's
it's a
right.
dinner we're doing or you're a guest at a dinner. So we have some actually homemade like 4 foot long charcuterie boards, so imagine trying to fill that up for a dinner party. Some of the ones you see on Instagram, we love to get inspiration from different followers, and I say foodies. I know we're talking about foodies, but
right. Right, that's a bad word. We learned it's a bad word.
There really is an art to building a good board, and really the biggest thing is just making it look really, really full and abundant.
They're delicious.
You know, what better way than, you know, to celebrate the holidays and like just abundance in general?
Yes, the new dude food guys are here. Can you stick around for a little bit? We've got some newsy things to get to, but we'd love to talk to you again as we want to talk about some holiday traditions with food coming up here on WGN. Back live here in the Skyline Studios, this is Anna DeVlantis. We are continuing to talk about family food traditions at the holidays. Ryan Burrow is going to step into the studio shortly here. He's got a fascinating report about Congress planning to raise the age to buy tobacco, all tobacco, not just the vaping and the e-cigarettes, but all tobacco, to the age 20, you have to be 21, that may pass imminently. So if you can be old enough to wear the uniform, fight for our country, join the military, but you still can't buy cigarettes, a controversial measure, and he's got a report on that. But let's go back to the food with the Nude Dude Food Guys and Lauren, and we've got G here in studio as well. Like, I think that sometimes the things that are traditional are the things that people just want to have around the holidays.
Do you have something? But you also mentioned culturally. It's so cool how people bring their cultural traditions with food to the holidays. For me, our family is Polish, so we have a non-meat Christmas Eve. And homemade pierogies. Oh, it is delicious. So it's so good. And these are things I don't really eat outside of the holidays, even though I'm quite Polish.
Right.
It's like me and the marshmallows. I don't know about the holidays that it happens
that
way.
They bring out certain things. Can you make the pierogies?
Oh, I can't. I haven't learned. I'm also not the best cook in general. My mom, everyone, every other woman in my family and many of the men are really good cooks. I didn't get that gene.
No.
I just like to indulge.
How about you, G?
Well, you know what? Similarly, I'm Korean American, so we do a lot of Korean dishes. So
what's a typical Christmas time Korean dish, or maybe just...
It's just a hodgepodge of everything. You know, it's a favorite of mine to have the, you know, roast turkey or ham and then a side of kimchi with it, which of course is now very popular. Everyone's doing
so
the fusion.
Popular.
But, you know, that's how I grew up. So there was always rice. Egg rolls is always festive. We have Korean barbecue, of course, which everyone's very familiar with. So it's just a hodgepodge of the very best of both cultures, very similar to what Lauren was saying. And then you just put it all together. It's a mishmash, and it's fantastic because you get to eat as much as you want to.
A little bit of everything.
Going back.
Yeah, it's interesting you say that. There's a story I pulled about some of the interesting holiday traditions, the foods around the world, and what they do, how they eat. And it's fascinating to see KFC in Japan, a Christmas tradition. Did you know this?
What?
I thought you were shaking.
Oh, yeah.
It says Christmas isn't really celebrated in Japan, but Kentucky Fried Chicken sure is. Eating KFC on December 25th instead of having a homemade Christmas dinner is a tradition there. Mm. So it's so popular, the chain asks customers to place their orders 2 months in advance for your chicken.
The other thing that I love about Christmas is to just go to Chinatown. And then you'll see every Jewish family and everyone else there. And it's fantastic. You can get roast duck and hang out there, and everything is open, and it's open pretty late. So after you have your meal with your family, you can then go and get late night dim sum or roast duck.
Have you done
it? It is. We, and as chefs, we often get hired to work the holidays too. So Thanksgiving, we usually work. Christmas, sometimes we'll do like a meal drop off if we can't be with our own families. But yeah, trying to go get takeout or some food for yourself on the holidays is very difficult. But without a doubt, you know, go down to Chinatown or get some Chinese food is a solid choice for
sure. Have you guys as chefs ever been tasked with trying to recreate family holiday recipes? Because that's got to be a tough assignment.
Yes, I think that's definitely one thing, and it's a big challenge, especially when you have like grandmas or moms cooking, and it's just like, how do you top that? I have a culinary background where I teach cooking classes, so I take it upon myself to try to like replicate mom's recipes, or even like we were talking about like Chinese food, like how to replicate Chinese takeout at home, how to make pot stickers. But yeah, like I think that's a big challenge, and I love to do things like that. Where
is grandma there? Like, no, don't do it like that. Don't do it like that.
Yes, pressure.
Just let me show you.
Pressure.
Always. Especially mom, too. Like, me and mom, we get very competitive. You know, I'm Mexican-American, so, like, we have, like, a little American Christmas and Mexican Christmas, so you get to indulge in two cultures and double the food, but yes.
So, Mexican culture, what do you guys have? What's on your holiday dinner table?
My favorite, which takes a lot of time to make, but mole, which is like, you know, thick red sauce, rice, chicken, and then you have like your ham, mashed potatoes, gravy, asparagus. But yeah, mole, I mean, traditionally, I mean, there's so many ways to make it. So having like my mom's method or grandma's method, it's a little different. So I get to kind of learn from both.
Which the method? Because I know some of them are like chocolatey, some of them are sort of spicy, some are like tomatoey.
So mom's, it's a little mixture of a sweet spicy, which I love because I love like sweet chili sauce for wings, for like spring rolls. But like for mole, yeah, sweet chili. Whereas like grandma's like super dark chile, it's a little smoky and more in the, it's like bitter chocolate taste. So I feel like that's a little more like rustic traditional because you have chocolate and chilies as opposed to like the new methods of making mole.
It's amazing how they use chocolate, and it just works with, you know, meats and pork or whatever you put on it.
Mole. Oh, that's my go-to. So
isn't
good.
And yeah. I told you that my kryptonite is cocktail shrimp.
Yes.
So I'm a very bad guest when you invite me to a party and you have cocktail shrimp. I am the one that is hogging and just standing and hovering by the cocktail shrimp and using all the cocktail sauce.
I think the two of us at a party, we'd probably get rid of a whole tray because I'm the same way.
The shrimp?
Yes.
Yeah. Devour
the
shrimp.
Because we'll have other stuff, and you know me, and I'm quite a picky eater.
You are.
So when I find the things I pretty much take most of it.
I'm 100% Irish, 708, married Polish. Can't wait for Christmas Eve for the pierogies.
Oh, so good.
You mentioned that. Apple pancakes, mushroom soup, and I'm sorry if I mispronounce this, Nalasniki? Anybody know that one? Nalasniki. Yummy. So there you go.
That doesn't look familiar to me, but
no,
it sounds good.
It does sound good. The pierogies, if you can make them from scratch, gosh, are they good.
A drastic difference between homemade and
Can you make them, Andy?
Yes. I actually do teach a dumplings class, and it's like an international dumplings, pierogies, ravioli, and banana. So yes, if you want to learn how to make pierogies and impress the family, come to a new do food cooking class.
Oh, get the little plug in there. I like that. Hey, work that in. 219, our family used to get some of the typical grocery store chicken in boxes. We'd always have so much chicken left over. We ordered KFC chicken strips last year to add to our menu. Not one left at the end of the night. Just placed the order for this year's party, and we updated the quantity. That goes fast. I mean, what do you guys find that goes like super fast at the parties? Like, you put it out there, and boom, it's devoured.
Yeah, again, for us, it goes back to kind of that opening course with the bread and charcuterie. I mean, people get excited. That's the first thing they see, and then they just kind of go wild. So like a bread board or a bread like plate at a restaurant, bread basket, people just, you know, go back for seconds, thirds, kind of not thinking, wait, we have like, you know, four more courses after this, but they fill up on bread. But
yeah,
it's good bread. It's our bread, so we can't
right.
complain, I guess.
And that is the problem with the holidays. Don't you fill up with all the appetizers and the cheeses and everything, and then you still got to eat the main dishes.
Well, because Lauren and I aren't doing any of the cooking.
Yeah, yeah.
And we're like, what's taking so long? I'm hungry. And then you're just snacking and snacking. But, you know, you can up the ante with the bread with really great butter and really great salt, right?
Do you guys? Absolutely.
Yeah.
So, yeah, we use, Irish butter. We use the European butter, a little fresh mulled on, sea salt on top. You know, so a lot of times people are just like, what is in this butter? And it's like, no, just good ingredients. Kind of going back to the conversation we had about sourcing local ingredients, just even butter, there's good butter and there's bad butter. So if you just get a really good butter and add some simple things to it, you'll be shocked
how
good it is.
About a little, just a butter on everything, right? Just good butter on everything.
That's why all food tastes good is fat
good
and salt.
Fat.
So,
Do you stay away from the dips? Because at a party, you know, I mean, lots of people, dips. I mean, I don't know. Do you try to stay away from that?
We do a little bit. I mean, we have some elevated dips, if you will. We do like an edamame hummus.
Oh,
we
wow.
do.
Oh, gosh.
So that's kind
fancy.
Of, you know, maybe a little healthier
and
for some
too,
people.
So.
But it's something different.
My guilty pleasure dip is the spinach dip with the water chestnuts, the canned water chestnuts, and you just buy the packet at the grocery store and mix it in.
Love it.
I get that can of chipotle peppers. You just go to the grocery store, you mix it with cream cheese. Oh my gosh, if you like spicy, everybody loves that. They
That's
devour
great with
it.
Taquitos, by the way.
Really?
Instead of just tortilla chips, taquitos.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So good.
Yeah, do you make anything at all, Lauren, or you just eat? You're an eater. You just go eat and appreciate.
I do all the dishes, pretty much.
She doesn't gain weight.
Honest.
That's amazing. That's what I love.
How is that
possible?
Because
I'm picky.
Good genes.
Because I'm that picky.
The shrimp cocktail diet, that's it.
Any other appetizers you guys recommend or any other things that you would bring as like a gift? So you like baking? Because I know you're baking today. You said you're doing bread.
Yeah,
but
so we're
doing
bread. I mean, I think, gift-wise, I mean, what better to pair with food than wine or some kind of alcohol, especially around the holidays? Food-wise, you know, going back to kind of just those good ingredients, you know, we're always proponents not only of butter, but just good olive oil too. So a nice bottle of olive oil, you know, especially coming from a chef to like a family or somewhere you can kind of, it's a gift, it's a thoughtful gift, but it's also something that kind of you can educate, you know, your family. I come from a very Midwestern family, meat and potatoes, you know, it's been the same thing we've done forever. But just trying to educate your family members on some kind of updated
culture. Because where are you from, Ryan? Remind us.
I'm from Peoria, Illinois. So just the heart of Illinois, just a couple hours south of Chicago.
So growing up, what was like a go-to holiday dish?
Meatloaf, mashed potatoes, ham, turkey, which is all great, but it's not something I eat outside the holidays that often. But now, being in culinary and obviously living in Chicago, I've been in Chicago for about 15 years. It's arguably the best food city in the world.
Oh, yeah.
That you can get anything, anytime. So that really opened up kind of my palate, my eyes to other foods and cultures. So now I love to eat every single thing. I love everything. but going home, it's still kind of going back to those like traditional roots and Midwest family values.
Right.
And I respect that and I love that, but there's ways that I can still, you know, as an act of love and education to family, give them, you know, some little tips on some new things to try, or like, hey, like, you know, let's use celery root instead of potatoes and sneaking in some vegetables or things like that. So,
A lot more to come here on WGN, including Santa at 2:30. Bring in your calls. Keep letting us know what you celebrate with, what kind of foods you love at the holidays. We're back with more here from the Skyline Studios ahead. Back here live in the Skyline Studios, this is Anna DeVlantis. We're continuing our festive holiday theme today on this Friday. Talking about, remember the Secret Santa program. Lauren, do you remember it? I mean, if you grew up in Chicago, it started years and years and years ago. Mm-hmm. Something you'd heard about?
Yeah, I've heard about it. We never really participated, but had definitely heard.
Steve Bertrand, I'm sure you heard about that.
The Secret
Santa program. It's legendary, right? For its the giving and how it just started. Turn of the century, basically, years and years ago, and just how it became this huge holiday giving program here in the city and brought thousands of needy kids Christmas who otherwise wouldn't have enjoyed it. And it just started with one man's idea and a thought, and the Chicago Tribune and even WGN Radio played a role in the whole campaign that evolved. An excellent article in the Chicago Tribune, and we want to say hello to Elise de los Santos, because she told this origin story about the Secret Santa program. It's really incredible, Elise, how this all began. Back in 1909 is when it started.
Yes, 110 years ago exactly this year. So, yeah, it was a... It was great kind of finding out how that all started in 1909.
It's also cool to see how just one person's idea sparked this thing that ended up helping thousands of kids, right? I mean, more than they ever could have imagined. Describe for us how it actually started, how they originally put out the word about the Secret Santa program back then.
Yeah, so it actually showed up as an anonymous plea on the front page of the Chicago Tribune in 1909. There was this man who was able to keep out his name from the paper for a few years, but later when he died, the Tribune revealed that Edward Churchill Fitch one day walked into the Tribune offices after going out to a party where he saw a lot of money being thrown around, and he was shown right up to the managing editor's office and said, "I have an idea. I've been doing this on my own for a few years." He had been giving gifts to needy children in the neighborhoods of Chicago. And he said, "I think we can get the whole city on board with it." So
really incredible, because he basically started out, and your story details this quote, "Last Christmas and New Year's Eve, you and I, friends, went out for a good time and spent from $10 to $200. Last Christmas morning, over 5,000 children awoke to an empty stocking." And he said, "Geez, all of us can give a little something, and boy, wouldn't that add up." Just amazing how the appeal was published from that thought in the Tribune, the Chicago Tribune, December 10th, 1909, and it blossomed into this program where they were hoping to help at least 2,000 children. Am I right, Elise? And they helped way more than that.
Yeah, at least 2,000 was the original goal.
And then how many did they end up helping in that first year?
By the end of the first week, there were 14,000 children on the list. And by Christmas Day, they'd reached 15,000 just that first year.
So amazing. Because then the men and women of the Chicago Tribune just sort of working overtime, right? They didn't know how to handle this program that exploded. So they just had them working all night.
Yeah, right. The very next day, letters started pouring into the Tribune newsroom. They set up kind of a makeshift Christmas bureau where they started sorting out the names of the children and the names of the people who were saying that they'd like to help out.
Did the kids actually, I don't remember this part of it, did the kids actually ask for something in particular, or did they just sort of fulfill wishes based on age and gender or however they wanted, whatever you wanted to give?
Yeah, so it was, they would have the names and the ages of the children, and I think Fitch was the one who would kind of organize, at least the first few years, he was the one organizing all those names. with the help from some Tribune people in the newsroom. And then, but it was up to the good fellows, the anonymous volunteers, Chicagoans, who would then go out and buy gifts for these children and wrap them up, and then they'd be delivered Christmas Day.
How did you decide to do this story? It was in Sunday's paper, I believe, and I was reading. I just thought, gosh, I remember this program. I remember how many family members participated and how we talked about it and how it was one of those uniquely Chicago things that started here and grew to be so mm-hmm. big that I think it was duplicated in other cities across the nation.
Yes, actually, when I was researching the story, you know, there are Goodfellows programs still existing and called Goodfellows in, you know, South Carolina. And there's, I actually heard from some readers out in DeKalb Sycamore saying they have a program still going strong there called Goodfellows. But the story idea actually came from one of our photo editors at the Tribune, who Marion Mather, and she deals a lot with our photo archive, and she saw photos of children from the 30s, 40s, 50s, you know, unwrapping gifts on Christmas Day, and it was all connected to this program. So we tried to trace back, you know, where it all started.
And there was this mystery around who it was, but that was revealed, you said, just a couple, like, years. What year was that? Do you know, Elise?
Yes, the Tribune printed, when Fitch died, they called him, they finally said that it was his, that he was the originator of the idea. Mm-hmm. And then, and I think that was in 1928 is when he died. And then a few years after that, there was another article that I found that ran in the Tribune about, you know, that story of that night at 1:30 a.m. of him wandering into the Tribune office. How it got on the front page, his anonymous plea.
It's amazing, too, because one of the things you reveal in your story is prior to that time in 1909 that no one had ever thought of enlisting newspaper readers, or now you would call it maybe crowdsourcing, or the way the internet has been used to do yeah. this in so many ways, GoFundMe, and you see all these sites that are able to help people today. Back then, this was like the first such kind of deal.
Yeah, definitely. He's definitely the first. I guess it would be, you know, maybe one of the first crowdfunded initiatives, and the only medium that everyone kind of had access to at the time was the newspaper. So the fact that the Tribune decided to run it on the front page, I think, is the reason why it was so successful right away and for so long.
Well, it's a great story, and I think if you're interested in it, you should read it. Elise de los Santos from the Chicago Tribune, thank you for weighing in today. Thanks for talking to us about it.
Yeah, thank you for having me on.
Happy holidays.
Happy holidays.
You guys all know Chicago. Do you remember this program? Do you remember it, G or Ryan? Even Peoria, you guys were given, too.
I do, yes. It's great.
And how it helps so many people.
Oh, it really does. It really changes the entire holiday.
It does. Mm-hmm. It did. And, you know, you think about it back then, it was like this unique Chicago thing. And I remember everyone was giving. And now you see so many platforms for giving. You see so many ways for people to say, hey, this classroom needs help, or there are kids over here who need help or toys. And it's really cool.
It really kind of installs a little bit of faith in humanity again,
right.
Especially after you go through a whole year and you hear all the negative headlines, especially these days, and then it just really warms your heart when you get to hear about stories like this, especially how long things like this have been going on.
Yeah, it is, and it's part of the season, right? We all mm-hmm. give when we can to however we can, you know, with our budgets and that kind of thing. We do want to go back. I think Ryan Burrow is going to stop by and talk with us in a few minutes here, but you guys, let's talk about these holiday traditions here. We were talking about food, wacky Christmas food facts. Here's one for you. Candy canes were invented to keep kids quiet when a choir master at the Cologne Cathedral commissioned candies shaped like shepherd's crooks so that they could be handed out to children at the church service.
God
and
bless
keep
him.
Them quiet. It does kind of keep them quiet, doesn't it? Because they take a long time to get
really
through the candy cane.
Yeah, but way back then, the parents wouldn't have had handy wipes in their pockets either. To clean
yeah, up. Very sticky. Very sticky candy.
Imagine the pews would be all like, yeah. Oh, sugar plums. Here's one for you. Sugar plums had nothing to do with plums. Anybody know what a sugar plum
no,
is?
No, I didn't know they were real.
Steve, you're good with trivia. You know what a sugar plum is.
I do not know.
Okay, you may not know it by their name, but these sweet treats are a type of candy. When they first came around in the 1600s, the term plum denoted any dried fruit, and typical sugar plums are made with a combo of dried fruit and spices rolled into little balls.
Are they like mini fruit cakes?
So they're like date
sound like it.
They're like date balls.
Yes, it sounds like that, doesn't it? I've never had a sugar plum before.
Well,
we
maybe
know
you
it.
Have, yeah.
Maybe.
What's a sugar plum fairy?
Dance of the Sugar Plum Fairies. You're right. That's named for them. Animal crackers were originally a Christmas treat.
Ah.
How about that? Animal crackers first introduced around Christmas time in 1902. The string on the box, get this, originally intended to use to hang those boxes on the Christmas tree.
Oh. No way.
Interesting. That's why they have, I always wondered why they had the strings on them.
Great fact.
Isn't it? Use that one at your holiday party. See how that works. Okay, here's one on fruitcake. Anybody like fruitcake here? Is anybody a fruitcake person?
So.
No, I don't really like fruitcake
either.
I mean,
they just seem so dense, like little bricks.
But do you try it at the holiday party? When you see the fruitcake, do you try it?
Only if it's got the year of origin on it.
Remember that story? Steve, remember that story we talked about, that family that from Michigan that passed their fruitcake down the generations.
140 years, wasn't it?
140 years from great-great-great-grandma. It's a symbol of love and family, and they're keeping their fruitcake. It didn't look so good, that fruitcake, though. It did not. It was not refrigerated or frozen in any way. It looked like, you remember the picture of that? It just looked like it was like this, it was this sort of black and brown mush in the middle. So not, but still a very nice symbol of their family and their love, and it was important to them. Very weird story. Mince pie. Anybody like the mince pie?
I don't think so.
My mom likes those, but they were originally topped with a Jesus effigy. So a pastry that they created a baby Jesus laid on top.
Sounds very serious.
Wow. Can you imagine how you do that?
Yeah. It would make me feel very guilty.
Go ahead, eat this. And then they say turkey was not the main dish at medieval Christmas feasts. It was actually, guess which bird they ate at the medieval Christmas feast. What did they eat?
A pheasant?
A peacock.
What?
No. Yes! That's what was going on back then. All right, Ryan Burrow stepped in the studio. He's going to talk about something completely different, something coming, passing through Congress potentially pretty soon, and we'll talk to him after we take a break here. Much more to come here on this Friday from the Skyline Studios here on WGN. Back live here, we're going to talk about the do's and don'ts of holiday parties coming up with our special guest who just stepped into studio, but now we see Ryan Burrow. A little bit of a tough time coming back from O'Hare. We thank you for making it.
Yeah, you know, I was there. There was an interesting press conference. Obviously, we do this, the holiday travel. It's in full swing right now. This is the biggest travel day of this portion of the holiday. And we learned what the do's and don'ts are of marijuana.
Oh!
At the airport. Now that marijuana is going to be, recreational marijuana is legal on January 1st, can you bring it through the TSA? And the answer is yes. As long as you're going to a location where it's legal. If you're flying to Denver, if you're flying to Washington, D.C., if you're flying to Detroit, you're good. If you fly somewhere else, maybe not so much.
Yeah,
you're at your own risk.
What if you go through a certain state or city where it's not legal? I guess you don't really go through TSA again.
They cannot arrest you in Illinois, even if you are at the TSA checkpoint with having it, because the ordinance will say you are fine. Now, where you land, that's at your own risk. They're highly encouraging you not to even bring it, but
yeah, if you do,
once you get on that plane, it's on you.
Oh, what if you have a layover in like Texas? And then the dogs are coming.
The sniffing dogs.
Yeah,
that gets confusing. Yep. All right, but that's January 1st, of course.
January
you would not
1.
Want to do that tomorrow or the next day or the next day. No, I get that. But you're actually working on another story we wanted to ask you about, something that could pass through Congress about the age to purchase the tobacco products.
Yeah, this is part of that $1.4 billion trillion spending bill that the president's signing off on, bipartisan support. How many times do you see a co-sponsor being Mitch McConnell and Tim Kaine together?
Never.
But this is something they worked on even before the vaping epidemic kind of came up earlier this year. They're going to raise the federal age to buy tobacco, whether it be e-cigarettes, whether it be cigarettes, whether it be cigars, whether it be pipes, if people are still doing that, whether it be chewing tobacco, to 21. Well, there are 19 states right now, Illinois being one of them, that has 21 on the books, but there's no cohesion, but it's from state to state. Remember, when Bruce Rauner was governor, he didn't want to raise it to 21 because he's like, well, then people are just going to go to Indiana and then they're going to come back. And then health experts are like, well, wait a minute. Are we more concerned about the tax revenue or are we more concerned about people's health?
What's the motivation if it was before the vaping epidemic?
Well, for that reason, states competing with each other and the health risk. I mean, what the American Lung Association says is by doing this, they're not stupid. They know that there are going to be teenagers who still get their hands on this stuff. But by creating additional barriers, by making it a little bit more challenging, they think that 223,000 lives will be saved just among people who were born between the year 2000 and 2019.
That's interesting. You know, but the point that you see made regularly when this comes up is you're old enough to be in the military at 18, but you're not old enough to buy tobacco products. I know California a couple of years ago passed a law that says, hey, this excludes, because they passed, you had to be 21 to buy tobacco, but they said it excludes the military. This particular one that would go through Congress would not.
Which is weird, because you'd think that you'd want your military not to be smoking, to be in the best
health. Yeah, how are you going to get through the drills?
Exactly. No, this is more of an umbrella one, from my understanding. Every state may have its own. And really, this is going to be enforced at the retail level. I don't see, you know, federal agents swooping in and grabbing 18-year-olds and throwing them against brick walls and arresting them. This is going to be more like we've got with alcohol. They'll do stings. They'll make sure everyone's getting ID'd.
Nice. Ryan Burrow, thank you so much for making time for us in the busy trip back from O'Hare. Ryan Burrow from ABC News, and also here at WGN News. We share him. We're very happy to be able to share him. From the 309, we've got, I never tried fruitcake until I was at a party, and they had a fruitcake from Costco. I bragged to everybody about how delicious it is. I had other people try it who used to think fruitcake was gross, but now they love it. The one from Costco. So there you are. Adam Hitzman is here. Thank you for being here. Appreciate it. You're here about the do's and don'ts of holiday parties. From McCormick College.
Yes, thank you so much for having me.
Thanks for being here. I saw you on the WGN TV Morning News, and I thought this is hilarious because it's really great, great stuff. Little reminders. Oh, yeah. Although I do feel, Lauren, we were talking about this earlier, new dude food guys are here too. I feel like parties, people sort of get it now, especially the office party, that you kind of got to behave. Go out later and party with your friends.
Yep.
But at the holiday party, you got to behave. You do. The work parties.
Yeah, a lot of times people tend to let loose a little bit too much when it comes to the holiday party time.
So you've got this list of reminding people what to do for the holidays. It's kind of fun.
Of course.
And where would you start, Adam? Tell us where to start if we want to make sure we behave or are a good citizen during our holiday work party.
Well, I think the first one that everybody tends to forget about is the drinking appropriately, especially when you get to that holiday party and you find out that it's an open bar for 4 hours or plus. A lot of people want to save the money, and they think they get excited, and a lot of times they get a little too excited.
Maybe don't go for the shots just because they're free.
Mm-hmm.
That would always be my recommendation.
And then don't go near the guy yelling, shots! Here, guys, shots! We're doing shots! Like, okay, yeah, it's a work
party. Try the punch. What's in it? It's a secret. No, probably also not a good
idea. Punch can be very dangerous at the holiday party because it tastes sweet and tastes like Kool-Aid, and then you're like, whoa.
Yep. It's the same way as at college. Just be careful what you're going for if you don't know what's in it.
That was my rule. Juice, please.
Yeah, that was my rule at college. If I didn't trust the people handing me the stuff, I did not drink or eat anything that they gave me. Okay, what else you got on the list?
It kind of goes hand in hand with the drinking appropriately, but dancing appropriately as well.
Oh, yes.
When that dance floor gets out, a lot of people tend to want to dress up as well for the holiday party. And then they have a few too many drinks, and they start dancing as if they're at their regular club that they go to. And you forget that these are the same people that you're going to have to see on Monday again when you come into the office.
And everyone has a cell phone and will be recording you, because that'll live on.
Yep.
If you
might be on Instagram immediately right after that. So you want to be careful of what you're doing out on that dance floor.
You can't let loose, though?
You can let loose a little bit, but I would avoid the grinding or the twerking at the holiday party.
Oh, I see. Okay. No.
I always like to think, don't do anything you wouldn't want your grandma to see you doing or know that you've done or said.
Some grandmas get a little too much fun,
that's
though.
That's true.
See, by then you don't care. I mean, like, you know, when you're a grandma, you're just like, whatever.
Yeah.
Who do I have to live for? All right, what else do you have on the list here?
We tend to advise people to kind of stay off their phones a little bit. It makes you seem not interested. It means that you're kind of shutting yourself off from everybody. And again, this is another opportunity at work to meet some people that maybe you don't normally meet on your everyday at the office, and your potential to maybe move up even if you meet the right person and connect with them. And so if you're on your phone, you seem disinterested and you're disconnected from everything, you miss out on those opportunities to meet new people.
That's true. I think that's a very true one, because you don't always get to interface with everybody in an organization. And you're right. That's the time when you go over and you kind of say, hello, I like it. I like that one. What's next?
Similarly to that is stepping outside of your clique. Because a lot of times in an office, you have the people that you're with every day and you're comfortable with, and they're your work friends. And a lot of times you want to stick around them because you know they make you feel good. But again, you lose out on that opportunity to meet others, to introduce yourself, to put yourself in a good light to others there, where you have that opportunity to improve your career potentially.
Circulate the party. That's what you just said.
Yep.
Are we missing anything here? Did we get through our whole list? You have one here. Don't hook up with coworkers.
Well, yes.
Okay. Yeah. All right.
That kind of goes back to the alcohol one as well.
Yeah. Sometimes those two go hand in hand. Yeah, they should be closer together on your list.
Of course.
Just for the future. I would recommend that.
Yep.
Those are great tips, though. Adam Hitzman from McCormick College. How come we don't know enough about McCormick College? I do see you out here on this, and I've seen you out on a couple other things.
Yeah, I'm trying to get our name out there a little bit more since I'm the Director of Marketing Communications. We do have four main programs in court reporting, paralegal studies, business administration, and criminal justice. We are actually the oldest court reporting school in the nation, too. We were the first school to have that program ever. And now we're actually venturing out into online programs as well. So our business program, our criminal justice program, and our court reporting program are all fully online as well.
I'm glad we got that in there. And I appreciate your time for this. And it's good to be introduced to the college. People might want to check it out.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you, Adam. Yeah. Let's go back to the New Dude Food Guys. We only have a minute or two here left. We have some people weighing in on fruitcakes. I did not know there was this much interest in fruitcakes, but the way to eat fruitcake 224 is heat a slice in the microwave for about 20 seconds and then put a scoop of vanilla ice cream on it. That's how you make
like
it taste
dessert.
Good.
Okay.
Yeah, a little vanilla ice cream. Go to desserts, you guys. What do you think for a holiday party?
Ice cream is always a winner for us. We do a lot of homemade ice cream. Is it actually some vegan testing, so don't get turned away by the word vegan. Mm-hmm. You know, it's indulgent ice cream.
How is it indulgent if it's vegan?
It's not. Well, so that's a good question. It's not fat-free. You get a lot of, like, fat-free, healthy ice creams. This is still full of flavor, still full fat. We substitute the dairy products with, like, coconut milks and stuff, so you're still getting a high fat content, which gives you that nice flavor and creaminess of an ice cream, but it's substituted all the... Anyone with dietary concerns or choosing to be, you know, a vegan or something like that, they can still have full flavored, good tasting ice cream.
All right, where do people find you guys?
On the web,
you do parties, you cater any kind of
cooking
party.
Classes. We're launching
cooking
a bunch
classes.
Of cooking classes from a variety of different cuisines in 2020. But the easiest way to find us is on Facebook or Instagram or on the web. But you just search newdudefood.com or at newdudefood, just like it sounds, and we'll be there.
All right. Thanks, guys. Ryan, Andy, appreciate it. Thanks for stopping by the studio
with
us.
Thank you.
The news is coming up next from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. All right, we're live here in the Skyline Studios here on this Friday, a festive, fun Friday, and we're talking about relationships at the holidays. Here with me, two very special guests, Rachel Czar. She's a lawyer, tell me, marriage family therapist.
Marriage and family therapist.
Licensed, yes. Right, LMFT, that's what that stands for, at the Spark Chicago Therapy, relationship and sex therapist. And you're also on with Northwestern Medicine and their Center for Sexual Medicine.
Yes.
Then we have returning Bella Gandhi of Smart Dating Academy, just to talk about what we were mentioning last half hour. We got a really funny text here. 815, we were talking about holiday parties, the do's and don'ts, with the emphasis on the don'ts, because that's the stuff that has lasting impressions.
Sure.
815, I wasn't drunk, but I did a knee slide across the dance floor at the boss's wedding and ripped my pants.
Oh, no.
From the knee to the crotch.
Oh.
So that's on the don't list. You just got to be a little less overzealous when you're on the dance floor.
Just do the moonwalk.
Yeah, that one you can't really get hurt there. No pants get ripped.
No pants get ripped. You're always safe with the moonwalk.
You ever see anything crazy at a holiday work party? Well, you guys work in like fun environments with fun people, right? Anybody? People are professional for the most part.
It depends.
For the most part. Yeah, I work with a small group of women, so we tend to keep it pretty
close.
Tame. Yes.
What about you, Bella? You see everything.
In the singles world, truth is stranger than fiction in the world that I live in. Just when I think I've seen it all, I've heard it all, there's something new that pops out of the closet.
This is a fun time because you've said there are very important dates that are happening right now in terms of more people are becoming single, more people are looking for partners this time of year. There's call it the cuffing season, you call it whatever you want to call it, but a lot of people are heading to the online dating world. Pretty soon, it was a big date, right? That a lot of people go there.
Okay, so if you're listening to this, and think about this, almost half of American adults are single, 48%. So what do we do around the day after Christmas? Everyone's like, woo, okay, what am I going to do now? let me get online. I want to find love next year. Now, one out of two singles, right, in this country, everybody's making resolutions. So this is called peak dating season. The Brits call it cuffing season. Like, you want to handcuff yourself to somebody.
Oh, is that what it's from?
That's where it's from.
It's like in a 50 Shades of Grey thing, or just
up with somebody.
Oh, okay.
That was my best British accent. So now don't laugh at that. But so much so that Match has this amazing data, because they've been around basically since the internet was invented, and they have it down to the exact day as to what the busiest online dating day of the year is, and it is Sunday, January 5th. And they have it narrowed down to the hour, to the minute. They know that how many messages are going to be sent on that day alone. I think during peak dating season, 60 million messages are being sent. Can you believe it? Like a million and a half messages a day.
And that's just U.S.
That's just in the U.S. And that's just on Match. Now add Tinder and Bumble and Hinge. I mean, it's like gazillions of messages. Yeah. So they say it's going to be the busiest dating day ever, by the way. So usually the Sunday after New Year's is the busiest online dating day. But Match is saying, well, based on the spikes that we've seen and the number of people coming on the apps, Sunday the 5th, busiest day ever. So guys, get yourselves excited. Get online. Call us. Ask us your questions, because this is the time when the fish are coming to sea.
Last time we were talking about this, it was interesting because we talked about how dating after divorce can be particularly difficult because you haven't been in the game for a while and you're a little rusty. And then we had a caller last time ask, well, how do you know when someone's even ready to date when you're in that world? Like, how do you know that it's okay to approach somebody that you're interested, you know, what are the signals?
Well, I think what we talked about last week, and I think that these are two good approaches. It either depends if you want to be more assertive or you want to be a little bit more oblique, let's call it. So if you want to know if someone's interested, you can make the beeline for that person and just say, hey, you know what? I would love to meet up for coffee, right? That's pretty easy. But if you're not so sure that you want to go that direct, you can always say, hey, you know, so I know you've been divorced for a while. Have you dipped your toe back into the dating pool? Mm-hmm. And that way you can just sort of see where this person is. And they might say, oh, I am not dating for another 5 years. Well, there you've got your answer. Or they might be saying, yeah, I just got myself on the apps because it's the busiest online dating day of the year coming up on January 5th.
So, I heard it from Bella Gandhi from Smart Dating Academy.
I heard it on WGN Radio
first. That's right. Rachel, we were talking because this is also a time that if you're single, it can be lonely. And, you hear this from your patients, mm-hmm. and they come to you at the holidays. And, you know, we were having a discussion about this, that it is obviously a time when some people feel very social and some people feel like, hey, I'm going to go get a date and I'm going to go to a holiday party. And others are like, I don't have anybody.
Right. And I think that a really important thing about this is that there's so much pressure around the holiday time to be having fun. Mm-hmm. It's all we hear about. It's so much fun and getting home for the holidays. And what we forget about is that the holidays also bring about a lot of pressure. There's pressure. I mean, even the idea of everybody's on a dating app, we've got to go on the dating apps.
I know.
I liken it to when you go to the gym on January 2nd and everybody's at the gym, everybody's, and there's so much pressure to get in shape. And some people just aren't in a mind space mm-hmm. to do that. And so it's important to really be intentional and be honest with yourself about why you're feeling that pressure to get back out there. Why are you jumping on the dating apps? Is it because you want a relationship, or is it because it's the thing to do and everybody needs to do it? And just remember that, you know, it's okay to not be having fun all the time around
right.
the holidays. There's a lot of pressure and added stuff that comes with it.
But isn't it okay to go on a date anyway if you just feel as if, you know, hey, I'm not going to commit to anybody right now. I'm nowhere near that headspace, but I would like to just sort of go on a date and have fun.
Absolutely. If it's fun for you.
Yeah.
I think that's a really important piece of it.
Right.
And I like, Bella, I like what you said about just asking the direct question. And that includes asking those questions of yourself,
Interesting.
Too. Am I really ready? What's my intention here? There's certainly nothing wrong with dating and going on the dating apps just for fun.
No.
It can be really fun. Mm-hmm. And it's important to be honest with yourself about what you're looking for.
What now, you're looking for.
Rachel, you're so right. Because mm-hmm. if you're not in the right mindset, right, and you want to jump on the bandwagon just because you know everybody's on the apps, but mm-hmm. you actually don't want to be in a relationship, you don't want to be on a date with someone, it's just going to be more of the same kind of disappointment, right? Mm-hmm. And so really ask yourself that question. Do I feel like the thought of going on a date actually excites me?
Yes.
It puts a little spring in my step. Do I want to meet someone this year? Then do it. But if the thought of it makes you, you know, want to hurl, then don't do it.
Right, exactly. Or if you it starts to feel like a second job, yes, or a homework assignment.
Yeah, no.
You know, I have so many clients who say things to me like, I've got to get, you know, I've got to be on the dating apps for 1 hour per day. And no. I feel terrible that I didn't do it, and holding themselves to all these expectations.
Yeah.
Dating is supposed to be fun. That's the whole point.
Well, I sat with a divorced friend of mine recently, and we were going through profiles. She said, no, don't like him. No, he's just, no. I mean, she found something wrong with absolutely everyone.
Everybody.
And I realized at the end of that exercise, she wasn't ready to be dating. She didn't want to date. She was not. And now she's perfectly happy. This is a little while later. She's found someone. She was totally, when she was ready, mm-hmm, it was actually pretty easy, mm-hmm, to do. And at the time, not at all. Not at all.
No. And for those of you who are like, I don't know, maybe I could be positive about it, but I don't know how, I'm going to give you my important term for a mindset that I want you to adopt. And it's called psychotic optimism.
Oh.
Okay. Psychotic. And I know it has the word psychotic in there. Right. So just work with me on this for a second. So it means optimistic at any cost, right? No matter what happens, you believe that love is out there for you, and it's a when, it's not an if. Right? So all you have to do is date like heck to find this person. When you adopt the psychotic optimism and take the if out of the equation, then you're like, okay, I know. Bella promised me that I'm going to meet somebody. So all I have to do is keep dating until I find this person. So be a psychotic optimist through this holiday season and through 2020, actually.
Right. Okay. That's good advice. We've got more to come, and they'll answer your questions too. 312-981-7200. Any dating or kind of relationship advice? We've got two experts.
Absolutely.
Here can answer any just about any question you want to throw at them. Let's go ahead and
anything.
You ready for anything? Anything.
Anything.
You're a sex therapist. You've been asked,
yes,
everything.
Sex too. Exactly.
Right, because I have a question for you, because
okay,
I think it affects a number of couples around the holiday time. We're going to be back with our guests here on WGN Radio. Stay with us. Beck, you're live on the Skyline Studios here at WGN on this Friday. This week, Chicago's Best is dedicated to making your early mornings easier. Pour yourself a cup of coffee and get ready for Chicago's Best Breakfast. It's all Sunday night at 10 on WGN. Back here with Rachel Czar. She is a licensed marriage and family therapist. She's with Northwestern Medicine Center for Sexual Medicine and Bella Gandhi Smart Dating Academy. Lauren Lapka's in the studio. Mm-hmm. We're talking about dating at the holidays, but I want to ask you a relationship question about the holidays, because I find this, and I feel like many people I know who are married find this, it feels like the focus of the holidays is on others, as it probably should be, mm-hmm, but you totally lose sight of your significant other at this time. And it feels like there's not as much, you know, there's not as much going on there. And I just wonder, is that just sort of the inevitable part of the holiday this time of the year? You know, we were talking about how January is the number one time for divorces. And you just wonder if that has to do with the holiday stress. Is it because people who are going to get divorced anyway make it through the end of the year just to be with the family? I don't know. I don't know the answer to that. You have any feelings about that?
Yes, probably slightly on the cynical side as well. But I do think that a lot of people are just gritting their teeth to get through the holidays for the last time because they want to make it nice for the kids. But I'm sure the kids are like, God, when are you guys getting divorced anyway? Right, because kids know. Kids feel that, right? But that's a whole nother subject. And sometimes, like, I get people on the other side of this, right, that are, and I hear the real stories, like, well, I waited until January so we could get the holiday bonus.
Ugh. What?
Right. So it comes down to money. Comes down to all kinds of insidious, sinister things why people wait till January. So
that's crazy. Do you hear it too, Rachel?
Well, I think on the other side of that, there's something really lovely about being able to put the heavy stuff on hold until the holidays are over. You know, as I was saying earlier, the holidays, there's a lot going
stressful
on.
Yeah.
And I have even a lot of couples that I'm working with in couples therapy where we're working on really heavy stuff, and we've made a really intentional decision to press pause.
Oh, interesting.
Talk about navigating the family, talk about the things that are going on, and come back to the heavy stuff when they have the mental and emotional space,
mm-hmm,
to do it. So I think there can be something really nice.
There can be something powerful about that too, I would think. Maybe just taking your focus off of the stress can be a positive thing that builds something.
Exactly. And I think there's something really, really beautiful in being able to come together as a pair, as a partnership, and say, this is how we want to approach what's happening in our marriage, what's happening in our relationship. And that may mean let's put some extra focus on each other over the holidays. Mm-hmm. It may be let's give ourselves permission to take a break from right. all of this, to focus on other things, to recenter ourselves.
There's a study, divorce is contagious. You're 75% more likely to get divorced if you have a close friend whose marriage has also ended. And that is interesting. I don't know that it's contagious, or maybe it's just a numbers game, a statistics thing. If you look at how many marriages do end in divorce, there are a lot of them.
Half.
Right. It seems to be consistently close to half of them. They're not forever. But does that, do you ever find that that's true? People are thinking, oh, my friends look so happy single. Me, does that?
Well, I think that, and also it there's something in just giving yourself permission to be unhappy in a relationship. That, again, it comes back to the idea of pressure, that there's so much pressure to be happy in your relationship. And sometimes there's something about seeing another couple that says, you know what, this really isn't working, that can give you permission to admit that to yourself and maybe talk to your partner about it.
We were talking about dating apps before. Lauren, I know you chimed in during the break and you said, I would never use a dating app anymore. And you're young. I mean, you're the age that uses these apps. Every year, your friends are probably all on them.
Well, those that aren't, dating anybody. I used them when I was younger. And as they grew more popular and, I grew older and a little bit more wise, I started to realize I personally was not a fan because, one, I don't really feel safe not knowing anybody. I would not feel safe going to meet a stranger in some random place. You never know what could happen. Two, to be on the app, and it's so funny because if you're on the app, you shouldn't think this way, but I would be like, why are you on the app? What's wrong with you that you are on the app? And I'm like, well, I'm on the app. What's wrong with me? So I find myself getting lost and just, you also hear stories. So there's been people that have talked to people and then they've researched them. They are currently dating somebody, but they're on the dating app to be flirting. And then you just get this negative sense of the type of people that are on there. So for me, I think it's nice to try and hold on to the hope that you're going to find somebody in person or through a friend. However, I also get really tired of every family party. They're like, oh, my God, I have the perfect guy for you. I'm like, oh, go again.
The holidays, those yes. questions come out for you? Mm-hmm. Everyone single gets that. They get the, hey, sure. Who are you dating?
Yep.
Why not? Well, I have somebody for you.
Yep.
They're perfect.
Every party.
So does it bother you? Or you think some of it's intended out of love? Some
right.
of it they want, they do think they know someone.
Right. It gets a little annoying when, I'm not in the mood to talk about it, or, hey, I actually really like being alone, Sometimes eventually I'll get there.
Right.
You know what? I like being alone. I like focusing on me for right now in my career. And I don't think there's anything wrong with that. I think sometimes we put too much, as you guys said, pressure on people to be in a relationship.
Yeah.
It doesn't have to be that way.
You can date yourself during the holidays,
exactly.
Right? Happily.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Less pressure, no arguments. I love it.
And you know what to buy.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Treated myself to a mattress. It was great.
Right. No gift questions.
You bought a mattress?
I did.
Wow. So did you shop around a lot and do that whole thing?
I did. I did all the research for myself.
There's so many out there. It's a little crazy.
And I get to sleep with myself, and I'm loving it. It's so nice.
Single isn't broken. Sometimes that's a happy place to be, right?
Single's amazing.
Right, and it comes back to the idea that you should only be on the dating apps if that feels fun for you.
Right.
The whole idea of this is to have fun, and when it feels like something that's worth working for, you'll work for it.
Do you know the stats? Because, Belle, I know you're always into the stats, and you've been tracking this stuff for a long time, and you've seen everything. Are the percentage of people on the dating apps who are actually in a pretty committed relationship? Is there some kind of data on that? Or do you have any sense of that overall, what you feel is going on there?
Meaning, are people that are already in committed relationships
on the dating apps? Yeah, but they're on the apps
scamming
to look for something else. Like what Lauren's pointing out there, how she feels as if a lot of these people are just sort of like either flirting or looking for a bigger, better deal. Or I don't know what their intentions are, but it seems as if that's something I commonly hear from my single friends. They're on an app and you're like, oh, okay, he's taken.
He's
my
married.
Friend's dating him or he's married, right?
Yeah. I mean, there are apps specifically for that. So if you're already married or in a relationship, head to Ashley Madison. Go do that, right? And yes, there is a lot out there. What I will tell you is online dating, you have to look at it as like the world's largest cocktail party, right? And there's going to be some of everybody at the world's largest cocktail party, right? There's going to be some people that are posing as single, right? There's always going to be the fringy elements, but overall, the majority of people that are going to be at that party are going to be good, normal, decent people. And that's the right mindset to have. If we walk into this, and I see this with my clients all the time, if you say, oh, there's only creepy people on dating apps, guess who you're going to see?
the creepy people, right? If you're looking for the narcissist, that's who's going to pop out to you because you have an ego bias. Your brain wants to be right. So tell yourself if you're going to do this, first of all, feel excited about it. And then tell yourself, I am going to meet good, smart, lovely, interesting people, and I'm going to have fun. And watch what happens to your dating life.
Mm-hmm.
Well, and it's also interesting because with that kind of mindset, I imagine it drastically changes the kind of questions that you're asking people. That you're asking questions that actually give you the information that you need in order to make that call, in order to be able to say, oh, you know what, this is someone whose values match mine or who's mm-hmm. looking for the right thing.
Yeah.
Same as you would at a cocktail party.
Yeah, and mm-hmm. you bring that energy with you, right? If you're looking for what's good and you're saying, I'm going to like you, mm-hmm. you're going to walk in with a different energy than the, you know, hey, what's up?
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, the energy.
Let's get through this.
Energy is the whole story. And you can feel that.
Energy is everything.
It totally is. Now, we only have a few minutes, but I do want to get to this because I think this is one of the most complicated things going on in the world right now when it comes to relationships. And it is about finding love at work. Okay. It seems like the rules are changing by the day. No one can keep track of the rules. Are you allowed to date a coworker? Are you, if you find someone track, if you tell your bosses, you know, can you come forward and do it? Do you have to do it on the side? Do you have to just kind of keep it, you know, totally secret? Well, what are the rules now? What is the deal?
Look, I'll take this. I think from my standpoint, we spend 1/3 of our lives at work, if not more, right? So I tell my clients, look, it's fair game. Is it more complicated to potentially date a colleague? Yes, especially if the relationship doesn't end badly. But also, know the HR policies where you work. It's probably not a good idea. I'm not judging. Maybe don't date your boss. Probably not a good idea to date somebody that works directly for you. There are ways around this. Transfer yourself out. Transfer the person out. But I think that so many people, work can be such a great place to meet people, especially if you work at a big company. Don't necessarily rule it out.
Don't rule it out. Do you have clients?
And don't date the crazy person at work.
Sure. Well, I think as long as you're being mindful about it and you're aware that there are power imbalances at play at work, as long as you're really listening and communicating and talking about the fact that there are sticky situations here, and you just have to be careful.
Right.
And that's always been the case. We're just more aware of it.
We're asking really quickly here. We have the best dating sites for over 40. What do you do? Where do you go? Bella, this is you.
I would definitely say give Match a try and give Bumble a try and give Hinge a try. Hinge. Dating apps. Hinge is owned by Match, but that's okay. And Bumble's independent. But those are three. Pick sites that have big denominators, right?
Yes.
I think in the next decade, what we're going to see is my prediction that we're going to go back to small niche sites and apps for special interests. I mean, we've all seen the Farmers Only commercials on TV, right? So yep. You never know what's going to come about. But right now, pick a site with the big denominator because, right, there's lots of needles in that great big haystack.
Sure. Okay, great advice. Bella Gandhi, Smart Dating Academy. So good to see you. Happy holidays. Merry Christmas. Rachel Czar, licensed marriage and family therapist, Northwestern Medicine sex therapist. Thank you. Thank you for being here, guys.
It's
a fun conversation, and have a good weekend. We're back with more here, and the news is coming up from the Northwestern Medicine newsroom. This is going to be so exciting, Lauren. I'm so excited.
A lot of energy in this room right now.
A lot of energy because we have a number of second graders who just entered into this room.
Hello.
Hello.
Hi. Hi.
Okay, the microphones are working, thankfully.
They are. How are you doing?
Oh, my gosh. This is going to go great. And we haven't even had our sugar yet, so this is a wonderful
time
of day.
This is how they're usually at.
Okay, one at a time. We have with us Margaret. Margaret.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Okay, Megan.
Hi.
And Gabriella.
Yes. Of course.
Yeah, Gabriella's obviously here.
Yeah.
And Margaret.
Oh, my gosh. Thankfully, we found some girls with sass here.
Oh, yeah.
Uh-huh. All right. Yeah. Well, guess who we...
I'm Megan, by the way.
Okay.
I'm Margaret McGuire. If you know me, I'm from FXW.
Audrina Vance was supposed to be here, but she's not here right now.
All right, guys.
Yeah, she's not.
We have something very important to happen here, okay? Something very important.
Santa Claus is coming.
Wait, guys, I'm shutting off your mics for a second because I want to make sure we can introduce our next guest. the Santa Claus, Santa himself, is calling in from the North Pole. He is such a busy guy this time of year, as you know, and he made some time for you guys to ask some very important questions. Santa, are you there?
Ho, 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 ho! Merry Christmas, Anna. Oh. How are you?
Oh, I'm good, Santa.
How do you know her name?
Because Santa knows everybody.
I know everybody. Is Megan there?
What's my name?
Is my little Megan there? And my Gabby? Yeah.
Don't forget me.
And Margaret, too.
I can't see. Oh, I knew Margaret was there. Hello, Margaret. Merry Christmas.
Don't forget me.
I won't. I am so sorry. And more importantly, I won't forget you on Christmas morning.
Margaret must have been good this year.
Oh. I was good.
Good.
Santa.
It is so good to hear from you, Anna.
Oh, Santa, how are things at the North Pole? How busy is it this time of year? Just to give us all an appreciation for what it is you do.
Well, as you know, time sort of stands still for me, so it's just so busy. I have not slept since, I think last year at this time. We just continue to work and work and work, but
tired?
It's so much fun.
We have a number of questions here, Santa, as you can tell, from the girls, and they're just chomping at the bit.
First.
Okay, Margaret would like to ask the first question, so let's give Margaret...
Hello, Margaret. Okay. It's Margaret. I shouldn't forget who Margaret is.
So you know my elves, Snowflake, Holly, and Peppermint?
Yes.
Elf on the Shelf? So can you make them hide longer?
Ooh. You know who can do that better than I can?
Who?
You.
I can't make them. They're Elf on the Shelf.
You close your eyes and you wish it, and it actually happens.
That never happens.
You try it. Tell your mom or daddy. Tell them.
Oh, and by the way.
And I think it'll work. Yes.
Okay, so, you know Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer?
I do.
Is he really real? Because my mom said that he wasn't.
Oh, no. Well, listen. He is real. He really is real. He has been going on. His family goes way back. Rudolph, his son, and then his son, and then his son. This goes way back, but yes, he's real. Oh, he leads my sleigh.
Good to know. Wait a second, Margaret. We're going to ask a question now. Megan gets a question.
Not me. Not now.
Gabriella. All right, Gabriella has a question for you, Santa.
Hello, Gabriella.
Hi. So my first question is, how do you deliver every present in one night?
Oh, I know. And so many people ask me that. But you have to understand, Gabriella, that time is different. 1 minute for you, one little minute, it lasts like a whole day for me. So time is different. I have a special Santa clock. Time stands still.
That's cool.
That is so cool.
It's very cool.
All right, Megan, do you have a question for Santa Claus? She wants the piece of paper, Gabriella. You got to hand her the, because they prepped their questions for you, Santa, in advance. They were very concerned.
They can ask me whatever they want.
All right, Megan?
How do the reindeer fly?
Say it again one more time.
How do the reindeer fly?
Oh, that's another good one. But you have to understand that what the reindeer eat is a special, very special kind of oat. And believe it or not, it's an oat that is lighter than air. And when they eat it, they can actually fly.
Cool.
I thought it was carrots.
Oh, it's fun.
Margaret, did you have a follow-up question to that question?
No. But do you know Rudolph? Like, go back to the Rudolph story. So, like,
Sure.
Is Rudolph real, but he, like, doesn't have a shiny nose? That's what my mom said.
Well, that's true. That is true. Your mother is right. We call him Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer, but it's not a light. It's just a very bright nose, and it shines off of his very bright eyes, and it creates light from the moon, and that makes it able to see better. Okay. But your mother is right.
Mothers know a lot of things. It's amazing.
They do.
It's amazing how moms sometimes have the answers, but not all the answers. That's why we needed
mothers are the best.
The Santa Claus to call in from the North Pole and ask these questions.
Okay. I would only do this for you, Anna.
Thank you very much, Santa. Why does Santa 847 sound a little bit like Donald Trump? I don't know. Did anybody ever say that to you, Santa, that you sound a little bit like the president?
Not at all. I'm actually surprised. Donald Trump isn't getting any presents this year.
Oh, that's too bad. Margaret wanted to know how old you are.
Oh, I am so old. Again, I forgot. My birthday cake is about as big as the North Pole and has that many candles.
Oh.
How old are you?
That's what he just said.
Yeah, but how old? Are you 60,000?
Oh, the actual number they're looking for,
yeah.
Santa.
Oh, 449,627 next Thursday.
Oh, how about that? We got time for one final question for Santa.
Okay.
Who would like to ask the last question? Because we're about to lose it here. All right, let's go back to Megan. Megan, what's your question? She needs the form there, Gabby. You need to hand it back to her. They've written out their questions because, Santa, they've been thinking about them all week long since I mentioned I was going to attempt to get you on the show, and then we were so excited
that we
actually did.
That's okay. It's all good. It's okay. Take your time.
You don't sound so stressed, Santa, even though you've got a lot to do over the next few days. How do you manage that?
It's not my first rodeo, Anna.
I bet. You got this thing down pat by now. All right, Megan, your question.
I do.
How do you fit through the chimney?
Oh.
That's a good one. That is a really good one. But the funny part is, even though I look big and jolly, when I get to the chimney, I breathe in and I become very thin. And I slide right down.
In movies, they say that you turn to coal dust.
Oh, is that a truth?
Who said that?
That's very strange. And very, 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 very strange.
All right, girls, I think Santa has to go now.
We've taken enough of his time,
all right?
Wait, so, just to let you all know out there, I'm from FXW, and my name is Margaret. So if you're from FXW, just to know, I'm Margaret.
All right, Margaret Santa. Gets the plug in.
Santa, I think Margaret needs a radio microphone for Christmas.
Merry Christmas to everybody!
Merry Christmas, Santa. We need a little more sugar in the studio, so we're going to get back.
I think so.
Much more to come here on WGN. All right, girls. All right, it's time for a trending topic. Steve Bertrand has stepped into the studio. We've got Lauren Lapka here as well. How about those kids?
Ooh. They left donuts behind.
I can't believe they did. Maybe they've had enough sugar prior to their arrival here. That was
imagine adding
my
more
sense.
To that.
But they did a nice job, and how nice of Santa to spend some time with us here, too. So, very gracious guy, that Santa. I just want to start out here because this is really cool. Did you hear this? The Cubs released a holiday-themed animated short film with a song.
No, I did not see that.
It's awesome, actually. Listen to it. We got it teed up for you here.
Oh, Wrigley Field, oh, Wrigley Field, our love is elemental. Oh, Wrigley Field, oh, Wrigley Field, you make me sentimental. For all the greats, we give our thanks. Fergie, Ryan, Santo, and Banks. Oh, Wrigley Field, oh, Wrigley Field, create October magic. Oh, Wrigley Field, oh, Wrigley Field, I love your every brick. Oh, Wrigley Field, oh, Wrigley Field, summer's coming, make it quick. I'd rather pitch instead of sing and unleash a big home run swing. Oh, Wrigley Field, oh, Wrigley Field, let's go win the World Series.
Woo! That's what you want to hear.
Are those the players?
It is. Some familiar voices there, maybe if you heard that. You, Darvish, Kyle Hendricks, Jason Hayward, John Lester, Billy Williams, all part of this musical tribute to the Friendly Conference.
It's kind of hard for Lauren to listen to, I would imagine.
I know, being a White Sox fan.
Yeah. I think we have a lot more to be excited about on the South Side right now.
Oh, where's their song, huh?
You know what? You take that up with them, Anna. I have no idea.
Didn't you just spend time with them in Mexico?
Yeah,
some of the greats. they're having fun in the off season. Another thing trending here. We were talking about the debates last night with the Democrats. They were on stage. And did you hear this part? Senator Warren
was denouncing the billionaires and the millionaires who are corrupting politics, and she's made a pledge that she's not going to be taking that kind of super PAC money and money from certain individuals. She's disclosing who she is, and she'd like to get most of her funds from small dollar donors, as you famously always hear about the Bernie Sanders, the $27 donation. But it felt a little bit like she was pointing a finger in the direction of Pete Buttigieg when she said this.
Most of the people on this stage run a traditional campaign, and that means going back and forth from coast to coast to rich people and people who can put up $5,000 or more in order to have a picture taken, in order to have a conversation, and in order maybe to be considered to be an ambassador.
According to Forbes magazine, I am literally the only person on this stage who's not a millionaire or a billionaire. So if this is important, this is the problem with issuing purity tests you cannot yourself pass.
That was his response to
that
saying
that was a big score for him, I think, yeah. Last night. Yeah.
It's interesting because he is taking from millionaires. And one of his points was, and billionaires, because we have to get the money into the party. And that's what I feel I need to do in order to strengthen.
Well, then he said, Senator Warren, you're a millionaire. If you were to give me a contribution, I don't think it would corrupt me. You know,
great point. Yeah. Well, and that just shows you, I think, one of the appeal of him, part of the appeal, he's a small town mayor. So a lot of people say maybe that's not enough experience. But the appeal of him is he doesn't seem to have been part of that process yet at that level. And you think of how many people go into office in this country and leave Congress as millionaires, right? They go in as sort of a regular person, maybe doing some sort of a regular job with a regular salary. And then they leave and the salaries go whoop. And we're like, whoa, how does that happen? Yeah. You saw the study a day or two ago. 9 of the top 20 richest counties in America surround D.C. This D.C. area. They went county by county. 9 of them were around the D.C. area.
That's where the money is, huh?
So you're like, government's working for somebody.
Right.
And you're like, okay. And I understand there's a natural progression of people who might, you know, move there, who have lobbying in big, you know, big dollar firms and things like that. Still, I think those numbers say a thing or two. All right, another thing happened at the debate today that caused somebody to have to issue an apology today. Did you see Sarah Sanders, the former White House press secretary? She kind of stepped into it without knowing it. I don't think any of us really knew this one, and I give her a lot of credit for apologizing. But did you hear this? It was the final debate question of the night, and Joe Biden said this. We don't have it right now, but what he said was, he started to say, he stuttered, basically. He says, I have absolutely no idea, and then he went on. And it was very clear there that he took a long time getting there, to the point where Sarah Sanders took to Twitter and just said, wow, you know, took a little while getting that out, or she made some
she
kind of comment.
In the tweet, she mocked him by repeating the I sort of thing.
Right. I have no idea what Biden was actually talking about.
Right.
Kind of like a ha-ha moment, to which he responded, I've worked my whole life to overcome a stutter, and it's my great honor to mentor kids who have experienced the same. It's called empathy. Look it up. So he was pretty bold in his response. I did not know that.
Well, so that really worked in his favor, because I was watching a show weeks ago, and they talked about, you know, the Biden has not been performing well in the debates. And someone said, you know, he was a stutterer as a kid, and he should bring that up, that he should, you know, explain that to help sort of diffuse it. And so, lo and behold, that's what he ended up doing in Sarah Sanders' bit.
Right. Yeah, it's I didn't know that about Joe Biden, but I do give her credit. I give her credit for apologizing. She did afterwards say, hey, I had no idea about that. I give her some credit for that, because you don't see everybody going across the aisle like that and apologizing for things when they do step into it. It just sort of seems to stay out there. That was what I felt as if when I saw that. I didn't expect that.
She was making fun of the stutterer, too, though, in the first
tweet. I don't think she knew he was a stutter.
Still wrote it in a... I
thought she thought it was just a misstep, but yet another sort of Biden-esque sort of misstep. Right. Remember when he couldn't remember his own website to go to at the end of the first, like, right. Just go to text, you know, whatever, and you're just like, okay, all right.
But she did also delete it almost pretty quickly to almost hide from it, which is not always a good look. But
yes,
I do appreciate the apology.
Yeah.
Because you're right. A lot of times they don't come.
Mm-hmm. No, they don't. And that's what I was sort of surprised by. All right, there's something else that's trending, and this has to do with Chicago. It's a pretty cool event that is starting, I guess, in January. It's the first
or Chicago's only, Indoor Blues Fest is coming up. They're going to do it indoors. You know how we have Blues Fest? I love Blues Fest in the summer. I just love it.
So much fun.
Love it. And this one is going to take place on four stages within an indoor walk, and it's at the Metropolis Theater in Arlington Heights.
Nice.
Isn't that cool? What a cool idea.
So wait, they can have four stages at the Metropolis?
I didn't know that. I haven't been there. All international talent, people from Chicago, people from across the U.S. We call it a galaxy of Chicago's biggest blues stars, and they're bringing in people from everywhere as
That's a great idea. I love that.
What a good idea to do that. Bring
Especially
some of those summer fests.
Outside of summer.
Right.
At least a little, because we have everything in the summer. So many great options for music festivals or any kind of food festival. And then, you know, around the wintertime and fall and spring, you're kind of like,
It just gets dark.
Yeah, you're like, what else is there to do?
I know, it's so festival rich. And then it's sort of like, bummer. But this is that's a great answer. What a great, cool thing. So check that out. There's more everywhere you go online. You can find out about the only indoor blues fest coming up, maybe Jazz Fest to follow or something else. All right, then there's this Wheel of Fortune, Pat Sajak. Remember Vanna substituted for him?
Right, talking about that whole thing.
Been around forever. Guess his age?
77.
What? I was going to say like 65.
73. So right in between. You guys were right. I didn't realize he was that old. But I guess he's been around for a long time. He looks the same, though. They all do. And he says, though, he was gone for a while. People were concerned about him. He said, I thought I was actually dying. He underwent emergency surgery for a blocked intestine.
Oh.
So he's speaking out about this health scare. As, you know, Vanna White stepped in and for him and that kind of thing. And everyone's like, well, what's wrong with Pat? Well, Pat came out, I think it was to Good Morning America today. Just, you know, talked about that whole thing.
Gosh. That's scary.
Isn't it? You think, you know, you think about, I thought it was just something sort of minor or something small, but it sounded like it really was a serious deal. Finally, just a kind of a warning trending item, 267 million people here in America who are users of Facebook had their IDs, names, and phone numbers exposed online as part of the shared on the dark web. So they found a cybersecurity firm was able to find that this came from an unsecured database of Facebook data that people had stored. They had stored online 267 million.
Jeez.
And I guess mostly American. Sounds like it's almost all of America. If you think of 267 million, I mean, if you take away the children and people who aren't on Facebook, that's a huge number. That seems like everybody. So I guess they're trying to say that people should contact. There's a Facebook link that tells you if you were exposed, and you can find out. So good stuff to know. Much more to come here on WGN Radio. And Ro Khan's up at 3 o'clock. Plus, the news from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom is also up at the top of the hour.